Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Mailbag with Pod Strickland. I'm one of your hosts, Jeremy Cohen. With me, as always, is Schwinny Poo. Schwin, how's it going?
It's going well. It goes, I guess you could say.
I guess you could say that. That's a pretty fair way of addressing it. We are recording today before the Hornets game. It is 4:20, blaze it. And yeah, I mean, right now it's about 5:27 p.m. So I think I speak for Schwinn. We're very relieved with the outcome of the George Floyd guilty verdict. That was obviously something that we're very relieved to hear, and I would hope you are as well. But with that said, of course, we've got some Knicks basketball, and that's why you're here, is to hear us talk about basketball. So, Schwinn, we've got some great questions today. You ready?
I certainly am.
All right. Fantastic. So our first question is from Boston Nick at Boston Nick. And he says, is it possible you can explain in better detail about the play-in scenario? It's all new to us, and I think our audience might find this helpful if it related to us. Absolutely. I think the first thing, how awesome is it that we even have to, as Knicks fans, understand this in the first year, whereas we thought, oh, well, eventually we'll get to the play-in game. That would be nice. So basically the setup is the 7th and 8th teams at the end of the season play each other, and the 9th and the 10th seeded teams play each other. The winner of 7-8 becomes the 7th seed. The loser plays the winner of 9-10. The loser of 9-10 is eliminated. Then the last two teams remaining play. The winner gets the 8th seed. The loser goes back into the lottery. What I am still a little bit unclear about is how that impacts the lottery itself in terms of seeding. But for example, as I'm sure a lot of people are curious in terms of the Mavericks, if something were to happen where the Mavericks finish with the 7th seed, but then get knocked out and they finish as the 9th seed instead, I want to say that, I mean, they'll for sure be in the lottery because they didn't make the playoffs. It's just a question of, would they be seeded as 14th? Would it possibly be lower depending on if other teams around them might be higher in the standings? We still don't have that kind of clarity, but that I think is the assumption to go off of. Did I miss anything with that, Schwinn?
I honestly have not even paid attention at all to anything about the plan stuff. I have no idea. I literally have no idea how it works. So I am going to trust you. And yes, I think that you covered all your bases correctly.
Your big mistake, trusting me. Next, we've got two more playoff questions, so why don't we lump them together? First is from Sam at FBL_Sam. Hey, guys, who do you think our ideal matchup is in the playoffs, avoiding the play-in, of course, to somehow get to the second round? And the next question is from Jay Brown at JJBrown100. If the Knicks finish with the 4th or 5th best record in the East, who would you rather face in the first round of the playoffs? I assume we will play the Celtics, Hawks, or Heat. So, Schwinn, who do you think is the ideal matchup in the playoffs for the Knicks to get to the second round?
Ideal matchup? What was it? Hawks, Celtics, and what's the other one? Heat?
Yes, that was from the second question.
I think the best matchup is the Hawks, I think. Who is on that team has proven themselves in the playoffs? Nobody. Gallinari has been really good for them. He's consistently not performed at the same level in the playoffs. Bogdanovich hasn't been in the playoffs. Trae Young has not been in the playoffs. And I weirdly suspect, I think all of their improvement and all that shit is less a function of anything to do with Trae Young and other guys in the team playing better. So, you know, shout out to Nate McMillan getting a lot out of that team, getting them on a run. But Nate McMillan also has not been a particularly inspiring playoff coach. Trae Young, like, I don't think his play style, the way he absolutely needs to get to the line a bunch, I'm not sure that translates very well to the playoffs. I think we'll probably be able to get away with a lot more of our fouling that we do in the playoffs than you do in the regular season. So I would like my chances against them. I don't think they have a good answer for Julius Randle. I don't think they have a particularly great matchup for RJ Barrett. I think Rose can have his way with any of the guards that they put on him. I think there's a lot to be positive about with how we just match up with them, generally speaking. And yeah, I mean, if you got Mitch back, that's another big boost. We'll see. I'm not sure. But yeah, if I had to pick one, it would be them in terms of just ideal matchup. Who I like would want to play, I would want to play Boston. I feel like that would be, it's like you're already playing with house money as it is if you get to the playoffs. So I would like to play Boston because if you beat them, that's fucking great. And if you lose, we can just be like, well, we weren't even supposed to be here anyway, bro. and it's great. So yeah, that's what I would do.
I agree with Atlanta. Nate McMillan, as you said, he is 3-16 in his last 4 years coaching in the playoffs. So that's not even enough to win one playoff round in 4 years. And that was a big reason why the Pacers let him go. I think that the lack of playoff experience certainly wouldn't help Atlanta. And you could say similar about the Knicks to a degree. You know, I mean, Julius Randle has never been to the playoffs. RJ Barrett certainly hasn't. Nerlens Noel has, Taj has, Derrick Rose, obviously, along with Taj, has. So I feel a little bit more confident there. But, you know, I mean, these are just two teams that are on the rise that really it's anyone's game. But I would still feel confident on New York's chances, even with you'll be listening to this most likely on Wednesday, April 21st. If so, today is the day where the Hawks will be playing the Knicks. So that would be a nice little intro to what's going on. In terms of the Celtics, you know, Tatum's finally kind of regaining his stamina. He has improved. He was player of, I want to say, the week not too long ago. He's really coming back into his own. But the good news is that so is Derrick Rose from COVID. I think that the Celtics would be a more fun series in that the competition would be greater. But I think that just being able to get the fourth or fifth seed at all, like you said, it's house money. I'll take whatever matchup it'll be, except maybe not the Heat, not because I'm scared of the Heat per se. I don't think I'm scared of really any team in the East, although I think there are plenty of teams that could beat the Knicks. Maybe not plenty, but a handful. But the Heat, of course, have just been able to outsmart the Knicks for all three of their games this year. I think that they could step it up in the playoffs. I just would rather not play them if given the opportunity. So unless you had a follow-up, we can move on. But did it sound no. like you might have?
I mean, I think the only thing I would say is fuck Boston. That's it.
That's a good one. Fuck Boston indeed. Jack Huntley at Tripping B-Balls. What percentage of Noel's defensive value does he give back on the other end? Because I think it's a lot, and part of the reason I think Taj is flat out better. Related, we talk about a spacing one a lot, but is there a stretch five we can target as a backup to Mitch this summer? What do you think about Noel? Because he obviously presents defensive value, and we tend to joke about how his hands are, you know, made of concrete and they're just simply not really there. Do you feel that because of his inefficiencies on the offensive end, that it basically completely skews what Noel is able to do and how he's valued?
Noel is really interesting. He's held up a lot better than I anticipated in Mitch's absence, like a lot better than I anticipated. So kudos to him for that. I do think that he has weaknesses that, the offensive stuff with him is real. Like, he's a guy, like, as much as people complain about Mitch, I think there's a really big offensive drop-off between those two guys. I think that Mitch, as a role man, commands a lot more gravity. I think he's a way better screen setter than Nerlens, which is saying a lot because Mitch isn't exactly, you know, fucking Steven Adams when it comes to screen setting, but he's gotten a lot better. And, you know, I think he's a lot better offensively in a lot of ways. I think that he also adds value as an offensive rebounder in a way that Nerlens does not. Nerlens has actually been pretty decent on the offensive glass, I think, but he does not. You don't get a lot of those cheap baskets with him on putbacks that you do get with Mitch. He does have, I guess, a little bit more diversity of how he can score, but I'm not sure that that diversity means much. Because it's still mostly like, I mean, he's not spacing the floor in any credible way, and teams are giving him that shot. So it's like, if he takes a little baby jumper, that's a shot that teams are literally just giving him, and I don't want to depend on that very much. And as far as his finishing around the rim, he is really good, but he, like you said, has terrible hands, so it limits how often you can just feed him the ball on the move. And like, I know people have complained about, oh, you know, Mitch doesn't have a post game, and that's fine. It's a fair criticism. But like, it's not like Noel's usage is considerably higher in any meaningful way. So I think that, yeah, like I think there's a very valid case to be made for that, that, you know, like his offensive drop off, the offensive drop off from Mitch to Noel does hurt us in ways that maybe aren't easy to quantify. But I just don't know. I guess like the hard thing is, you know, this was like the thing, and like, it's not fair for me to be like, well, of course Mitch's numbers are down this year because he's playing with Elfrid Payton and teams aren't defending him, when like, you know, that's ultimately what Nerlens is dealing with too. And I guess I would like to see Nerlens and Mitch eventually just get more minutes with not Elfrid Payton because of how teams are able to defend the Knicks when Mitch or Noel is on the floor with Payton. You know, as Jack pointed out, it means you have two non-shooters on the floor, which makes you incredibly easy to defend. So, you know, if you can put Rose on the floor or quickly on the floor with those guys, how does that change the overall flow of the offense with that unit? And how much more does that get out of them? Because both are not high usage guys at all. I mean, Nerlens' usage right now is literally under 10. He's at 9.8, which is by far a career low for him, which is maybe not a bad thing because he's not like, you know, I don't know if you really want Nerlens expanding his usage much beyond what we're asking him to do. But I do think that you could probably get a little bit more out of him with better spacing, a more dynamic guard in that sense. So, yeah, I don't know if I even answered the question completely, but yeah, I do think there's a drop off for sure.
Agreed. But, you know, I mean, that comes with the territory of having a backup player covering for Mitchell Robinson. And sure, I mean, yes, the defensive rebounding, that is a key element that I think is where we really will see how much the Knicks miss Mitchell Robinson. We've seen it already. But yeah, no, I think you said it very eloquently. And in terms of spacing at the five for a stretch five this summer, in terms of the, I mean, I think that there are quite a bit of available centers for cheap. I don't really know how many of them are going to be cheap enough and also stretch fives. I like, when you look out at who's available, and I'm probably blanking on someone, but, you know, it's at the top of the market, it's going to be someone like Rashawn Holmes. It'll be Jared Allen, even though he's not going anywhere, similar to Mitch, who I do not think is going anywhere. Noel falls in the same boat in terms of who he is as a player. He could be a Knick. I'm not entirely sure. And then you've got, you know, like Bismack Biyombo and Cody Zeller and Enes Kanter and guys who just, you know, they're not outside shooting threats. So I think if you're getting it, it's maybe going to be through the draft. And I don't see the Knicks trading for, you know, necessarily a backup center, although they could. They absolutely could. But I don't think it's I think it's much more likely, as we've seen with Mitch, with Noel, with Norvell Pell, even or even with John Henson, even though he didn't play in a game, where the Knicks clearly like rim protectors who finish well at the rim. And they haven't felt the need to go out and get shooters at that spot. And I think that's fine, ultimately. You know, you would prefer if players could take more jump shots. Of course, Noel spaces a little bit. Taj, now and then, you know, he can hit that corner three too. So I just don't think it's gonna be a priority, and I don't know how common of a trait that'll be in terms of the free agents who are out there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually like that many. I think stretch drives are super overrated just as a player archetype. I think that they're not that important. You know, look at the team. Like, there's a difference between a big that can shoot and a stretch five. Like Jokic and Kat, for example, right? These guys are offensive powerhouses. And yes, they can shoot, which makes it, which is great. But like, why are they offensive powerhouses? It's not because that they can shoot. It's because of everything they can do from the post, mid post, elbows, you know, scoring, passing, all of that. It's their whole package that makes them special. It's not the shooting in specifically. And quite honestly, if they shot 30% from three, would that make them less effective offensively? I really don't think it would that much. It's like Embiid. Embiid shoots, what, 40% or something from three this year? Do you think teams... I was watching that game yesterday with Golden State, and I just like... I'm sure they were throwing a party every single time he was jacking up a three. I know for sure every time the Knicks have played against Philly, any time Joel Embiid takes a jumper, that's a win. I don't care where, I don't care if he's taking it a wide open in rhythm catch and shoot three. Anytime he's out there taking catch and shoot three, that's a big win for the defense, I think. Now, I do agree that you need to get like, you need to have some type of lineup where you can effectively like, open up the paint for Julius more, but not have him have to shoulder a large offensive burden or defensive burden, rather, I would say. And obviously that can only be for certain stretches. So obviously the Obi Toppin pairing with Randall, that's something that Tibbs has been very, very hesitant to go to at all. I think the only time we've ever even seen it is when we've been shorthanded or even then when we have foul trouble. And it's like extreme foul trouble, like Taj had four fouls in the first half type of foul trouble. So I don't think that he feels that that's going to be a successful unit right now anyway. But like, can you get somebody like Jamichael Green from Denver? That would be something I would look into. I think that he's a player who can spread the floor nominally, but also doesn't leave you too short defensively. Of course, you're going to take a hit defensively with Julius effectively playing the five or whatever. But, you know, I think that he is a solid enough defender that you're not giving up a ton there. So that's kind of how I would try to find a solution to what Jack's suggesting there, more than looking for like, okay, let's go sign Luke Kornet again or something.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to the next question, we have Rick Holtzman at Benji 43. And Benji says, can Reggie Bullock remain a starting wing on this team next year if they'd like to take the next step? After PG, what is the next most important upgrade? So I do believe that with Reggie here serving in a 3-and-D spot up role where he's connecting, especially like the impact he's making now, he's not an issue, especially when you look at a lot of the players that Tibbs has employed in the past. He's had a lot of just like kind of plug and play guys. And he's been fine with that. He's rolled with it. It's really just finding that driving point guard who can create contact, space the floor, work in the half court, play adequate defense, you know, encompassing all of those qualities. That's something that I think will mean a lot more to Tibbs right now. But I do think that maybe Reggie, you know, he doesn't have to necessarily be the option to be a starter, but we've already seen the Knicks take a significant step forward. If we're talking about that next step, well, I mean, it feels like the floor keeps getting raised, right? Like if the Knicks win with Reggie Bullock, they win a playoff series and they get to the second round. I mean, is replacing Reggie Bullock going to be the difference between getting from the second round to the conference finals? Not necessarily, no, but I think that that's also not his responsibility. I think it would much more be with the player I just stated to whoever that would be. So, and in terms of after PG, what is the next most important upgrade? I mean, it might just be time, like actual time in the sense of RJ Barrett developing his skills even to a greater extent. Mitchell Robinson having the ability to bulk up a little bit more, at least we would hope so. He's still on the younger side, so adding weight could definitely benefit him. you know, all these players just becoming closer to their prime that's really going to pay dividends. And the truth is that a lot of them aren't close to their prime. They're at least three seasons away. I mean, we're seeing it right now with Randle, where he's technically in year seven, although his first season ended in the first game, and he's taken this monstrous leap, and the sky is still the limit for him. So I'd say if you want to talk about a more important position, yeah, you could talk about the wing. That's probably the easiest point to look at. But I think as of now, in terms of taking that next step, you can do that with Reggie.
I think they need a more dynamic wing. I would like to keep Reggie. I want to keep Reggie. I like Reggie. I think he's as somebody who was very skeptical of whether he'd be able to bounce back this year. He's definitely bounced back this year. I think he's been excellent. Tyrese, enemy of the show, Tyrese, at London's Theory on Twitter, he might have tweeted, I think he tweeted something a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday, of it was kind of showing like it had a break. It was just screenshots of shooting by month, and it showed Lonzo's, which is, you know, very up and down month by month. And then you see Reggie's, and it's just like 40, 41, 38, 39, 40, right? He's consistently hitting those shots. And that has, I don't even know what the fuck he's shooting this year for three. I'll look it up, whatever, 40%, 38%, I don't know, whatever it is. But he's shooting like that's a real percentage that you can count on night to night. Shooting 40% from three this year. He also has a great rapport with Julius Randle. They seem to be not just having good chemistry on the court, but as kind of like, I mean, their chemistry on the court seems to indicate some kind of friendship and connection off the court as well, or outside of just basketball. I think like we've seen post game interviews. I think when Reggie had that steal to close out the Orlando game, I remember the kind of press conference, or not the press conference, the interview right after, Julius was there, like kind of hyping up Reggie. And I just think that you see that a lot with those two. And obviously the way they play off of each other this year has been amazing. But I do think that the Knicks need a more dynamic player. I think like we're going to see this when we get to the playoffs. There's one thing, right? There's a reason why Tibbs has closed when Burks is healthy with Burks over Bullock a lot, right? There's a reason for that, because at the end of games, when teams are truly locked in defensively, like I know that people like to believe that, you know, we should expect players to play the exact same in the first quarter through, you know, the end of the game. It's not realistic, right? You play basketball, I play basketball. Everybody knows you're defending a lot. Scoring game point is a lot harder than scoring the first fucking bucket of the game, right? Everybody's locked in to a different degree in those closing stages. And I think in that moment is when you will see the limitations that a guy who, quite frankly, can't really create anything off the bounce has. And I think ultimately what the Knicks, and it doesn't need to be this offseason, it doesn't need to be next offseason, or maybe it needs to be next offseason, but it doesn't need to be this offseason, because the Knicks, you don't want to overpay for this, but the Knicks, I think they really do need a little bit more of a dynamic wing, even if it's still in that 3-and-D mold. I think you still need somebody a bit more dynamic to kind of jump into that starting lineup. Like, ultimately, if you can get a better version of Burks, which is not easy to find, to be quite honest, I think you would have to consider it, and I think you should maybe pull the trigger on that. But, you know, I do think that they will need to do that. And I don't think it's a big issue. Like, I don't think that that's an indictment of Bullock in any way, or it shouldn't be seen as one. It's just like, I do think that a team that's starting Reggie Bullock without the type of stars that you might see in, like, you know, like, as an example, the Nets can start Joe Harris and be a contender because they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden, right? They have three superstars, two superstars and a guy who thinks Earth is flat, but it happens to be really good at basketball. They can get away with that. His Joe Harris not being the most dynamic player because of those three, right? And as good as Julius Randle has been this year, and as good as RJ Barrett has looked in his second season, I don't see those guys. I don't think Randle is ever getting to that level as good as he's been this year. And again, that's not like a criticism of Randle, because I think he's been like a top 20, 15 to 20 ish player this year, maybe a little higher even. But like, he's not that type of offensive player, right? Like, we have seen against the best defenses that there are limitations to running everything through Julius Randle as your offensive default. And like, that in turn exposes somebody like Bullock to an extent, his limitations. And I don't know who that wing is. I'm not sure who you would, who is the guy that you think can be, that can take you to that next level. But I do think that they do need somebody to take it to get them to the next level. Are we answering the second part of this question too? The after point guard, what's the next most important upgrade?
Yeah.
I mean, that one, that's the one for me. Like, I think that if you look around the NBA, most of the teams that are contenders or competitive have multiple guys on the perimeter, on the wing specifically, that can create. Fournier is a more dynamic offensive player than Reggie Bullock, right? I don't think that it makes sense for that to be the upgrade, because I don't think he's good enough for that salary difference that you're going to have to pay him to be justified. Whereas, like, can you get, try to think of like you're not going to get him like Jaylen Brown, right? I actually think he's a really good defender, but he's a really good on-ball defender. I don't think he does all the boring off-ball, like, stick to the team defensive scheme shit that Reggie does, which adds up, as we're seeing, with the Knicks having the third best defense in the NBA. But like, you'd obviously be willing to pay the difference because of how much more dynamic he is offensively, right? And I think, like, ultimately that is the type of upgrade the Knicks will need to find in the long run to take the next step. But that doesn't need to be right now, and that's okay. Like, they can, maybe they draft somebody, right? Maybe they draft a wing, and in a year or two, that guy can step in and be that guy. But, you know, the dumbest thing they could do is feel the need to do, they have to get it done this offseason. You know, like, if they can get Fournier for, let's say, like, $15 million or something like that a year, I would be okay with that. But I just don't think that, like, I don't think that that upgrade is going to yield as much improvement as I once did. And that's specific to Fournier. And I also am not sure I want to pay the money that would be required to get somebody like him. So, that's my very long-winded answer.
Sure. So I have something relevant to talk about in terms of that, but first I'm actually going to mention these next few questions because they all tie into it. So the first one is from Tyrese the Creator at London's Theory, as Schwinn said earlier, friend of me of the show. Hi, Schwinn, Jeremy, first time, long time. Why should Kyle Lowry be the number one free agent target this offseason? I'll hang up and listen. Next is Vivek at V Dadania. This is a little bit more of a loaded question, but one, did you see the market today? Shout out Hug Life. Schwinn, did you see the market today?
I did not. I was following, I saw the market today. I was very busy following the goings on of European football and the Chauvin trial. So, or not the trial, I guess, the verdict. So, I was not very checked in on the market today.
It wasn't great. I'll leave it at that. The second question from Vivek is the final stretch of the season a bit overhyped? Knicks could possibly end the season 8-6, even including losing four of the six games on the road. We'll circle back to that in a moment, because number three is, would either of you consider Mike Conley as a PG in free agency If so, what price? Joe at JJoe1708. Can you see CP3 opting out? Jesus, my cat is having a field day with her food. I'm sorry about that. It's just the call. Shut up. Shut the fuck up. Okay, she's not. Can you see CP3 opting out of his contract and becoming a free agent this summer? And then fourth and finally, Dig Dougie Dog at Dig Dougie Dog. Who do you want at the point over the next 2 years, taking salary and cap flexibility into consideration? Do you lean more Brunson type or more Lowry type? Also, how would you feel about running it back with that being the only change? So I know I've thrown a lot out right now, but just to basically consolidate, we are talking about Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley, CP3, and some other options. So just in terms of evaluating the entire landscape of what's going on, I truly believe that the Knicks are going to continue on the flexibility track. I think that it is really important to them because they recognize, and I believe this is the smart thing to do, that having the space for elite talent is better than loading up on good talent and then kind of wondering, well, how are we going to create space for this elite talent if the right opportunity arises? We're talking about a Knicks team where they look good. They look really good, and that's an important thing to consider. So I would love to go after Kyle Lowry. I know I'm speaking on behalf when I say you would too. The only thing is that if you're Kyle Lowry, would you take a one-year offer knowing that the Knicks are trying to stay flexible? Or if Miami comes calling and says, hey, this is our last chance to use cap space, we want you, we're willing to give you 3 years at $25 million, how do you say no to that if you're Lowry? I don't think you can. When you're looking at Conley, are the Jazz going to be back? Are they going to be kept as a whole? I think they are. I could absolutely see Ryan Smith, childhood fan of the Jazz, saying, I've got billions of dollars. I'm totally fine with paying for 1 to 2 seasons deep into the luxury tax if I have to. We'll try to figure out ways to save money if we can. But if it means keeping Conley, I want to do it. CP3 opting out, he would actually, if he opted out and signed with the Knicks, he would be giving up money this season. He'd be losing at least $5 million this year. I think it'd be more likely if he opts in and then goes for the 2-year extension with Phoenix, or opts in and becomes a free agent and then signs for 2 years in any other place before the over 38 rule goes into effect. And then finally, I guess if we want to talk about flexibility or paying a player or whatever it might be.
Hey, let's have an argument. Let's have an argument.
All right, let's do it.
Why do you, I know that you think this, so I'm going to out you on the pod. Why do you think that Kyle Lowry would choose Miami over the Knicks?
Why? Well, I think based on the fact that he has talked about the fact that he wants to lock into longer term contracts. And I think that could play a huge factor. A lot of times we seem to talk about these 1-year deals for these big name players, and they don't really happen. Like, when's the last time we have seen guys be like, oh yeah, I'm cool being a 1-year rental, and then you can toss me aside and do what you need to do to get those other stars? Like guys want to feel like they are prioritized, and nothing says priority like giving someone a long-term contract. And I think that is the biggest factor for why Lowry would consider other options, especially if it's, you know, the right situation. Like, I don't think he would go to Dallas because it's not like Luka can't play with the ball in his hands, but he does a great job of having it in his hands. And I don't know if Lowry necessarily wants to be in that environment. Or there was also, you know, the idea of Lowry even going to Miami in the first place, where there are thoughts of him being traded there. And we don't know how he's going to feel, of course. But this idea of like, okay, it's clearly there is a Heat culture that people or players seem to really enjoy. The climate, the lack of taxes, the fact that this is, you know, I don't think this is a very good team, but they made the finals. And I think that has to stand for something in these players' eyes or ideas. And so I think that's the biggest reason. It's, if you told me right now that Lowry was on board to sign for 1 year and then like $30 million, which is, I believe, pretty much the contract he has right now, I'd say, yeah, sign me up. I just don't think he's going to be interested in that. But, you know, how many times have we looked at situations that players are in or could be in and said like, oh, yeah, that's like it makes no sense for him to leave, and the player leaves, or like it makes no sense for him to go, And he goes, we can't determine what is right for them. But I think that with the long-term flexibility, or even with a sign and trade with Philadelphia, if that would have to be a 3-year contract, if they could pull that off. I just think that when you're 35 years old and you want to lock into something, that is something to consider. That's an important factor. So,
all right. Yes, they made the finals and great for them. Fucking Tyler Hero got to play in front of nobody and apparently looked like an NBA player. And now that he has to play in front of 5 people every night, he's playing like me. So yeah, congrats to Miami for making the stupidest, most bullshit finals run in the history of the NBA. I'm very proud of them. They can go fuck themselves. Yes, they have this history of fucking Heat culture. Everybody fucking jerks off Pat Riley, you know, the fucking Godfather. He puts the rings on the table, all that shit. Great, dandy. I think that they are a team that if you're like, I think Kyle Lowry is a pretty smart guy, right? I don't think that he's a guy who's just going to be let's say that the Heat, we know that generally speaking, they like to keep flexibility. Right. Like they fucked up with that one off season, right, where they decided they had to like overpay everybody that they had because they went 41-41. By the way, that should be something that I hope the Knicks are mindful of. But they, you know, other than that, they've been pretty smart and open about the fact like that they want to keep flexible. And that's fine. What I mean to say is I think both the Knicks and Miami, I think they would both go 2 years on Kyle Lowry. I don't know when. I think that would also line up with when Jimmy Butler's contract expires. Is that correct?
No, Jimmy Butler can opt out after the next season, I believe.
Okay.
Let me double check that.
Let's say he opted in or whatever, you know, they can come off the books at the same time, right? Which has generally been a thing that they like to have, right? Oh, look, we have $70 trillion in cap space now to go sign some new stars or something. I just don't see them going 3 years. And I think the Knicks would go 2 years for Lowry. I think that if you look at the teams and you're Kyle Lowry, I think you could look at the Knicks and very easily be like, okay, I love Jimmy Butler. I love Bam Adebayo. But like, what is actually the future trajectory of this roster? Where is the improvement coming from? Whereas I think that Kyle Lowry could look at the Knicks and very easily be like, okay, RJ Barrett, he's starting to look like a young star, right? Oh, Julius Randle. This guy's 26, and he can handle all this regular season usage, so I don't have to do as much in the regular season. Butler can do that too, but like Butler doesn't play 80. Like he doesn't have the durability of a Julius Randle, right? Like I think that's fair to say that as great as Jimmy Butler is, he's somebody that has to be managed through the regular season and often picks up, you know, injuries that hold him out for 10, 15, 20 games in a season. I think if you're Kyle Lowry, you look at this team and you could look at the Knicks and be like, okay, if I come to this team, I'm replacing Alfred Payton. How much better is this team with me? And if they're already in the same tier as a team like Miami or Boston or Atlanta, and I'm the difference, like I just think that like that's a lot better of an. I think that the Knicks are a much more appealing destination than they've been in a long time. I think that they're just as appealing as Miami. I agree that the taxes and the weather and all that shit is part of it. But I also think that like New York is a pretty fun place to live. And I'm assuming that, you know, he's from Philly, right? That was one of the reasons that he was open to being traded to Philly was he's from Philly. New York is close to Philly. It's a very easy trip to go see family and friends and whatever the hell he wants to do if he goes there. I also think that like the Knicks have a lot more potential and wherewithal right now in terms of assets and cap flexibility to not just sign Kyle Lowry and be like, okay, now win us a championship, but to be like, okay, we signed you and now we have 5, 6, 7 things that we have that can be moved or traded or done to improve and bolster the roster even more. And I think if you're Kyle Lowry, you, and not just Kyle Lowry, I think this for like any big name free agent, like I think the Knicks have guys in place that you know they will go for it if they feel they have the, like, if there's a reason to, right? Like, I don't think the reason they didn't make, like, the reason they didn't make a move this year at the trade deadline, to me, wasn't because they don't want to make a big move. I think it was just like, well, this team, what, there's no big move. There's no little, like, you know, getting an Evan Fournier, for an example. I can't believe I keep going back to this fucking loser. Evan Fournier, like, you know, you remember this. Their Knicks fans are like, why didn't we do that trade? Like, I think if you had Kyle Lowry, right, if you already had that guy, you're in a different position in the standings. I think then they would have made a move like that, right? Like, then it's way more likely to be like, okay, well, this little upgrade, not a drastic upgrade, but a bit of an upgrade, is worth it because of the fact that, like, we're in this higher bracket of competitiveness in the NBA, right? Like, I think that is what the Knicks are waiting for. And I think if they, like, they can meet with Kyle Lowry, and yeah, Pat Riley will meet Kyle Lowry and he'll be like, yo, yeah, you know, trust me. Like, I always make splashy moves, like, you know, fucking Heat culture. Like, I'm going to make it happen. And yeah, you can do that. And like, there's reason to, obviously he has a history of being able to pull shit out of his ass. Although I didn't really understand why people thought they like won the trade deadline this year. But yeah, Oladipo looks great for them. But like, Leon Rose, right? He can actually sit there and be like, no, look, like, we've got all these first round picks that we can trade. We've got some young guys that we would be willing to move in the right scenario and shit like that. Like, I think the Knicks have a lot. They have a really good pitch to make. And I think that if these guys are as connected as we've been told they are, and as much as their track records would suggest, I feel very strongly that they, I think they should be, if they want Kyle Lowry, if the Knicks want Kyle Lowry, I think they are the favorite to get Kyle Lowry because they don't have to jump through hoops and they don't have to fucking, you know, like, they have a very easy pitch to make and a very easy path to upgrading the roster even beyond just adding Kyle Lowry.
I'm not saying the Knicks don't have a good pitch. I think they do. I just see Miami having a better pitch because this is Miami's last year to have cap space at their disposal. They're locked into BAM. Butler's player option is at the 2022 season, where you have to think he will opt out and try to sign a 5-year maximum where he can get 35% of the salary cap and he can get 8% raises now that Miami will have his bird rights, and that'll work out perfectly. They'll have Duncan Robinson, who is signed. So the bottom line is that this is Miami's last time to really have cap space for at least 5 years, most likely. So when you consider all of that and that they want an upgrade and they know it needs to be this window right now, I don't think they're really going to care about the amount of years per se. Like, I think they could say, we'll give you 3 years and either the third year is fully guaranteed or it's some sort of team option. And it's a higher annual salary to compensate for that fact. It could be something like that. And again, the pitch to Lowry from Miami's perspective is, we just went to the finals, even if it was the bubble. They are more battle tested. They are more vet heavy. They are they're a team that is more ready than the Knicks are, and that's fine. But when you look at the Knicks in terms of that 2-year contract, right? The Knicks right now, their window as well is also 2 years for having cap space. It's fine if they do a 1-year thing. It's 2022, and that's really the last opportunity where they would be able to operate below the cap, because they will then have had Julius Randle under contract. They will have RJ Barrett's extension. They will have Mitchell Robinson. And yeah, I'm not saying they can't make trades. Obviously, they can. They will have plenty of assets at their disposal. My concern is if you have Lowry on a 2-year deal and he's then up in 2023, then it's kind of like, well, we can't do a whole lot with that, because RJ's cap hold, if it's, you know, going to be around the amount that his salary will be quite a bit, and featuring those other guys I just mentioned and whoever else might come into play. So that's why I really think that the front office is going to be saying, let's just, you know, we've been able to do this with Elfrid Payton as our point guard. We can stay intact. We don't have to go after a 35-year-old and bow to his command. We don't have to give into what he wants. We can do what we want and still get to this level because we did it before and we can do it again. And so that's why I see them basically saying Lowry would absolutely take us in the next direction. Same thing with Conley. I just don't see Conley signing anything less than a you know, 2-year deal. And then just talking about like the Brunson types, you'd have to trade for Brunson this year, which is probably the smartest way of getting him because of the fact that after this year, he would have a very low cap hold and you can really take advantage of that and use 2022 to then build a deeper team with more money. So all these factors coming into play is why I think that the Knicks are going to look for a player using that money where it's going to be long-term money as opposed to just like 1 or 2 year, or I should say, you know, 2 years in this case, or 3 years, and then that player is 38 years old. I think they're really going to try to focus on how we can line up RJ and Julius and that max player in some capacity to the point where you can then continue with that window for 4 or 5 years. Because to me, if you're getting Lowry, you're basically saying, well, we have a 2-year, 3-year window at most. And I think that the Knicks can go in on that window, but I think that there is also a hard out. I think that there's a certain point with Lowry where it's like, okay, it stops here. It has stopped and we don't know, like that is the time it has expired. Whereas if you go out and you try to get a better player in 2022, then it's like, oh, well, we're wide open and we have other salary that we can use and the assets to get that even fourth star at our disposal. So that is to me why I don't think Lowry makes sense if he is focused on a multi-year deal. Again, we don't know what he wants or what he doesn't want, but I think based on the rumors that are out there, and those could be fabricated, of course, but I think it just makes sense why he would want a multi-year contract and the second year would not be a team option. If anything, it would be a player option, and at that point, he could just opt in and kind of just piss on the Knicks cereal if a bigger opportunity arose.
Yeah, look, I hear all that. I just think that I don't see that. I think that they will be patient. I think they will be judicious about giving long-term money. But I also think that, like, they are a front office, probably because they have Brock Oller, who is willing to sign guys to longer deals if they're good enough, because they will feel that if need be, they can trade them for value or whatever if the need arises. That's just how I am reading it. I also think that, like, there will be pressure internally from Tibbs. And just, like, I think they want to win. Like, I think there is pressure on them to, like, it's hard. The hardest thing, right, is when you have a season like this is, okay, how do we now move this thing forward and how do we evaluate it properly? And, like, the danger for them is, or for the Knicks in general, like, you have this nice cap situation thing going on. It's like, as you just laid out, it's not a permanent thing. It's something that has a time clock on it. And depending on how they view it, like, I think that signing a guy like right now, like Lowry, who helps you, I think, on the court immediately in terms of, you know, just replacing Alfred Payne with someone that I think is a pretty clear upgrade. But I also think he helps you, like, get more out of your core players and also is a benefit to, like, your development, kind of, like your ability to develop players on the court. Like, I think that a guy like Lowry gives you a lot more leeway in what you can do in terms of, like as good as Rose has been, right, for the Knicks, like, you can get away with a Lowry quickly pairing in against bigger backcourts, let's say, than you can with Rose quickly. I just think he unlocks a lot, and I would be disappointed if they don't at least seriously kick the tires on adding Kyle Lowry, because I think that he is a player who adds a lot of value on the court and just in terms of intangibles that they really need, and that can help them in the short term anyway, over the next couple of years, take that next step forward into a higher level of competitiveness.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And by the way, James Harden is now out indefinitely after having an MRI today and experiencing what the team called a quote, and I quote, a setback while conducting an on-court rehab session, end quote, on Monday. My thoughts and prayers are with the Nets fans who were already raising banners. Sorry.
Yeah, the Nets have played 6.5 games, really, with Harden, KD, and Kyrie together.
Is that right?
So, yep, yeah, because and the half game was when they thought KD had COVID and he had to come out of the game and then went back in and then came out again. So nonsense. But yeah, they've had next to no time to really do anything. It'll be fascinating. It'll be really fascinating to see how that continues. And of course, Kyrie Irving has shown that he can be healthy this year. That is not something he has shown consistently over the last few years prior. So again, like this is that window, and it'll be really fascinating to see if they're able to continue with that or if they're going to have some difficulties.